The date is August 27th, 2004, and we are watching Napoleon Dynamite. Welcome to I Used to Hate This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Hate This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we used to not remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia and see if we like them now. Yes, Colin is taking a hiatus, and so instead we have a resident co-host while we go on this journey of movies that we used to loathe and giving them a second shot. So my name is Sean Wells, but with me in his residency on the show, the Pedro to my Napoleon.
He's a sledgehammer. Hello, I'm Aaron Knowles.
That's right. We have Aaron Knowles filling in for Colin while Colin takes a summer hiatus. But I'm very excited about what we have chosen to do here, Aaron. Doing a little bit of, let's see if the movies we hate are any good. And I have discussed many times on the show how much I loathe Napoleon Dynamite. So I'm looking forward to this.
I gotta say that I was never, like, I guess I would say that I was indifferent to it, but also at the same time, it was a very, like, cringy movie to watch.
Yeah.
Like, and this movie was a hit.
Yeah.
Like, it was a hit everywhere.
Huge. Huge. Vote for Pedro shirts. How many of those did you see in your local, like, record store?
Still,
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Well, this week, we are looking back at August 2004 when the movies and theaters were, without a paddle, Exorcist the Beginning, Alien vs. Predator, Princess Diaries 2, and of course, our movie for today, Napoleon Dynamite, which earned an impressive $46.1 million on its $400,000 budget.
So, spoilers for this 19-year-old film.
Huh? Yeah,
so
geez.
If you haven't seen it yet, spoilers alert.
Yeah. I mean, and I should have said right off the top, I mean, I didn't write Colin dialogue, so put whatever spin you want on that if you ever want to do something fun. He always tries to put some sort of, like, topical spin on it when he does it, because he hates doing spoilers, right? And so this is a show about hate.
Yes.
So, I mean, he hates doing spoilers, so he tries to make them fun for himself.
Mm-hmm. Got it. I'll remember that for the next time.
Well, so I found three taglines for the poster of this movie. Number one, it's going to be a dynamite summer.
That's not bad.
Yeah, not bad. It's
like
there.
It.
Yeah, it's all right. Well, number two, same planet, different flipping world. That works, right? I don't mind that.
But only if you've seen it.
Well, I suppose so, but that makes you have to see it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like flipping with an apostrophe. There's no G on that. Oh, no, they've dropped that G. Yeah, yeah. Soft N on the end of that ending. And so it's like, well, you wonder, you laughed unusually there because your mind probably suddenly went to, like, the hard N? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, or the soft R, or taking the R off.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. I see where your mind might go on something like that. Well, number three, here we go. This one, I think they're coming home strong with this one. He's out to prove he's got nothing to prove.
Which is, that to me is the most fitting.
It kind of sums up the whole feeling of the movie.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I do love the it's going to be a dynamite summer.
It's going to be a dynamite summer. It's on the nose, but hey, it's take it. You got it. You got it. Use it. You know, yeah. There could be something about Napoleon storming. You know, you could have used Napoleon as well. Sure, why not?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, some sort of 1812.
He's not short, but his temper is.
Yeah. I don't know. Why not? Well, that may not be a very good description of the movie. So we go to Aaron for a 60-second synopsis.
Is that like SportsCenter? I don't know. I don't watch sports.
Well,
so.
you get this rock guitar intro.
Oh, fuck,
oh,
yeah.
Yeah, 60-second yeah, 60-second synopsis is metal, and then I usually, mm-hmm, like, underlay it with some relevant song from the movie.
Okay,
it'll probably
cool.
be that disco jam we were jamming out to earlier.
Keep on dancing. Yeah, I love that song, actually. It's always like so nostalgic. Anyways, to the point. 60-second synopsis. Here we go. Napoleon Dynamite is an awkward story of a young guy in a small town who has zero friends. Gosh. He lives with his grandma who is never around and apparently has a secret life. Whatever. And a brother who is prone to the internet chat room. And an uncle who is stuck in the past in more than one way, meaning his life, his hair, and his overall thought process of where his life should have been. To the point that he feels the need to enlist the tech-savvy Kip, who is Napoleon's brother, into helping him afford and build a time machine, which goes terribly wrong. Let's just say it was nuts. Napoleon himself is a bit of an awkward guy. He does what he wants, when he wants, where he wants, unless he's feeding Tina the alpaca the daily casserole. All during this time, we see Kip, Napoleon's brother, get pretty serious with his chat room soulmate. During our time with Napoleon, we witness him meeting his new BFF, Pedro, a possible awkward love interest, Deb, who can totally drink the whole milk if she wanted to, and his newfound love of dancing behind closed doors. Using his flair for the lack of societal norms, his talent for dancing, and his passion for really nothing, Napoleon helps Pedro become class president, helps Uncle Rico discover what life is like in the present, and that he too can play tetherball with the opposite gender, even with her poofy self-made sleeves. If I could leave you with a few words, it would be, I love technology, but not as much as you love me, always and forever. So, there's your 60-second synopsis.
Ah, yes. Oh my God, Aaron, this is going to be a fun summer. I mean, oh boy, you just jumped right in. You're just going to fit right in. I mean, there was a reason why I reached out to you to be our fill-in co-host for 3 months. I mean, because, and we've got some fun. We've got some fun coming ahead.
We have some painful fun.
Painful fun. Starting with this one. Oh boy, Napoleon Dynamite. When this one first came out, I mean, I remember, this is one of those ones that for me always is the ultimate example of when someone overhypes a movie. That's what this movie was for me. I never saw it in theaters, but the hype built and built and built, like we mentioned kind of at the top. And so I saw this for the first time on DVD and I hated it. I'm like, what the fuck is this? But everyone had told me how hilarious it is. And it's like, I just don't get it. And like a friend of mine and I were talking and she said to me that I hated that movie too. That was so terrible. Right. And we talked about a couple things and chuckled about it, thinking back about it. And she's like, well, maybe we have to watch it again. And I'm like, no, I will never watch that movie again. And here I am, you know, 20 years later, breaking the promise. But I'm just like, I refuse to give it a second chance, because if I'm only going to laugh at the movie when I think about it later, it's not a funny movie. Mm-hmm. But I think to me, it was just the overhype of it all was just one of these things where it's the funniest movie you'll ever see. It's the funniest movie ever. And I mean, I was into movies like Tommy Boy and, you know, like the Adam Sandler Fair or Road Trip, Euro Trip, those kinds of movies. And for me, I was not here for this subtle whatever the fuck this was humor. And I'm like, no, stupidest movie ever. I'll never watch it again. And here we are. Now
welcome.
Dreaded every second leading up to this, but I know you have a couple of painful weeks coming ahead of you as well. So it's going to be a terrible first month, but I love it. And I know other people are going to love it. Aaron,
by fire.
You said indifference. So what is your history with Napoleon Dynamite?
So the first time that I ever saw this movie, I remember that my mom took me to it. And this was because she was like super like into it. She was like, I don't know. She had all of her friends were talking about it. I guess just it was one of those things that was circulating the parental network. The parental nodes were inflamed. Okay.
So now I was I would have been 25 when this movie came out. 26. How old were you?
2004. I was 18, 19.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I don't even remember the exact like reason why I went with my mom to see this. I just remember like I went because she asked me to go see it. Mm-hmm. And I was not really excited about it. I was from the beginning I was indifferent about this because I had heard people saying that it was funny, but I hadn't really like seen any commercials, and it just looked like a weird movie. And it's funny because I remember like after this movie came out, there were several movies that tried to like exactly fit this type of like humor and look. Like there was a movie called Gentlemen Broncos that came out, and it was just very, and I've never been one for uncomfortable humor, like cringy, awkward humor. I've never been one for that.
I have a hard time watching.
I've watched The Office. I've watched the entire The Office, but it's so difficult for me.
Okay.
That would be a painful thing for me to cover on a show. Cause like, it's so like Michael Scott is one of the most painful things that I've ever witnessed.
Yeah.
But this movie, like I said, I remember watching it. I remember there being like some like the cameos that are in it, because there's some people that are in this movie you would never have expected
Bader
them.
Dietrich Bader and
Rex Guando, you know, like you just never expect to see some of these people, and you're just like, okay, like everything else about the movie is absolute shit, but like to see that guy, you know. Talking about his you know, you want to see me roundhouse kick somebody in the face with these babies on, you know, it's like that's it, and there's nothing else that's necessarily redeeming about it. Like it's an entire movie about nothing.
Yeah,
it's like an episode of Seinfeld that goes for an hour and a half. but I feel like Seinfeld had better cinematography.
Ooh, coming George. In both guns blazing right off the bat. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny you bring up Rex. I read that Brad Garrett auditioned and Jack Black also was wanted, but those could have been a couple of interesting alternate castings. So, but ultimately, you don't hate it or you don't love it. You just...
This is not one that I keep in my library, and I have a very large library of movies.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, this is one that I would not openly, like, if somebody would be like, hey, you want to watch Napoleon Dynamite? I'd be like, no.
Yeah.
But if like, you know, if I'm, you know, I don't know, if there's no other channels on in the hotel room and Napoleon Dynamite was the only thing other than MSNBC, I might watch it.
Yeah. Or if a buddy calls you up and says, hey, you want to watch this movie I hate?
That's a fair point.
Yeah. I guess there's two circumstances. Yeah, I mean, it's been chronicled on this show that I've got a rather substantial DVD collection where it's like, why do I still have like a couple thousand DVDs? Because at this point, it's the integrity of the collection. But But there was...
The internet's not always going to be there, people.
That's right. Skynet will rise up at some point. But there was one point this week where I had this sudden moment where I go, oh shit, I might own this movie. Not because I've ever bought it, but because I've inherited a couple of other DVD collections over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a sister-in-law that decided she was going digital, so gave me her couple hundred DVDs. You know, when my mom passed, she had wanted me, you know, she gave me all the DVDs. And so I've got these big piles and I'm like, oh my God, one of them might actually have this DVD. But no, thankfully, unfortunately, I didn't own Napoleon Dynamite. But yeah, I had a moment where I thought, I might.
But HBO Max did.
Yeah, I haven't quite finished unpacking my mom's DVDs yet. So
it's probably in there.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It wasn't. I did search. Yeah,
I'll say this one thing that was really the redeeming thing for me was so the actress who plays Deb, I know we haven't gotten to the cast yet, but Tina Majorino, who happens to be in one of my favorite like guilty pleasure movies, which is Waterworld.
Okay, yeah.
I'm always pleasantly surprised to see her in this movie.
Yeah. Okay. What's interesting is that we have come to discover on I Used to Like This One that John Grease pops up in a lot of movies that mm-hmm. we end up doing. And it first came up in like episode, I don't know what, 16, 17, somewhere around there when we did Monster Squad. And he plays the Wolfman before he turns into the Wolfman.
Yeah, he does. Oh, my God.
At the time, the guest on that show referred to him as Napoleon Dynamite's uncle. And I said, I hate Napoleon Dynamite with a fiery, fiery passion. So, like, the knowledge that I hate Napoleon Dynamite came up way back, like, 120 episodes ago, right? So, now I get That's to see, wild. Oh, there's John Grease. I've seen him several times since with this show. Well, here we go. Buckle up, because I had to watch Napoleon Dynamite. Here we go. Directed by Jarrett Hess, who is responsible for Nacho Libre as well, which is one of Colin's favorite shows. Produced by Sean Covell and Chris Wyatt, and written by Jarrett Hess and Jerusha Hess. I've heard the name Jerusha. I forget what show it was that had the name Jerusha. Hmm. Superstore. The character on played by, what's his name? Mark McKinney. His wife was named Jerusha, and I always thought it was an
interesting name.
Weird made-up name, but no, I guess not. These
it
two,
exists.
Jared and Jerusha Hess, met at Brigham Young University in Utah. That's all you need to know. And that kind of explains why John Heder is the star of their movie, even though Jake Gyllenhaal was a possibility. But
what?
John Heder is a devout Mormon, and so that explains that connection.
Yes.
That's for sure. Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal, he would have been well known for something like Bubble Boy at the time. And so this would have been right there for him. Yeah.
John Heder was, gosh, that guy, this really took his career off, didn't it?
It was the only thing that, like, really, that, yeah, it was, yeah. he had nothing.
Yeah, I want to say, like, from this, I need to look at his, but I want to say from this, he went into, like, the Benchwarmers, which was absolutely horrible.
Yeah, there was the Benchwarmers, there was, I don't even remember. Yeah.
But he's done a ton of stuff, a lot of voice acting, everything, so.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, and the Napoleon Dynamite cartoon. I was wondering whether to go for extra credit on this episode, and I wasn't willing. Even though, I mean, I'll give first impression right off the bat. I didn't hate it as much as it deserved to be hated, but the hype around it was wrong. Because something like this,
really?
I feel like it has a much more Wes Anderson vibe. Like, it's mm-hmm. you know, it's very Life Aquatic in a way, right? Without mm-hmm. without the very obvious, like, sets that Wes Anderson likes to use, you know, like the that new movie that he has coming out with everybody that has ever worked in Hollywood in it, that the one, like, the Atomicville or whatever it's called.
Oh, I haven't heard of that. I love Wes Anderson films. There's a new trend going around on TikTok that people are doing, like My Day as a Wes Anderson film, and they're all done so perfectly well. Yeah. It's such a great challenge.
So So watching this, I really definitely got that vibe, even though when it first starts, I'm like, holy shit, it's Fox, it's Paramount, and it's MTV, and somehow Disney doesn't have it on Disney Plus. What the fuck is going on? But yeah, I'm just like, oh my God, right? Like, I forgot that you said at the top August 27th, but really this movie came out in January.
Mm-hmm.
of that year, and went through festival and festival and festival, and then had limited release in, like, July, and then had wide release in August. When it went to wide release, they actually added a scene.
Really?
Did you wait around till the end of the credits?
Absolutely.
So the wedding scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was added because of how popular it was doing in all the in all the screenings, all the, like, limited releases. It was doing well enough that they're like, let's film something else. And they did, tacked it on the end. And that scene alone cost almost as much as the movie did on its own.
Really?
Yeah, that scene itself was a few $100,000.
That's insane.
Yeah,
that is insane.
Gotta rent a horse.
Yeah. Horses are expensive. That's funny.
Oh, yeah, that was wild. I out of habit, I've waited till the end, and I've been quite surprised more often than I thought. You know, with everybody thinking that it's a Marvel trend that has brought post-credit scenes, it's like, oh, no. Ferris Bueller is not the only one in the past that did an after-credit scene. You know, there's a Knight's Tale, there's been a lot.
There's been quite a few. Yeah. One thing that I think that's really interesting about Napoleon Dynamite is, did you know that there's actually fan theories about this film?
How so?
That it's actually set in purgatory.
Okay. Is that why everything's got like the 80s vibe to it?
It's why, there's two theories that I read about that I thought were kind of interesting, was the fact that this movie, so everybody's saying it's purgatory because each character, everybody kind of lives alone, or they're all like lonely in some case. Like Uncle Rico lives in his van out in, you know, the boons.
In his van down by the river.
By the river. We've got a regular Bill Shakespeare. But everybody, like even the girl that Napoleon Dynamite asks to go to the dance lives far out out in these fields. And so they were trying to say like everybody is there for a specific reason. Like Uncle Rico's there because, you know, he can't escape the past. So I thought it was really interesting to see that there was actually a fan theory about that. And then there was another one that I read that was each character represents a different type of loneliness.
Yeah.
And like obviously like Uncle Rico is the like disillusioned loneliness. Kip is the digital loneliness because he's like, you know, using the chat rooms. And then Deb is like, she wants to be like a fashion girl. She wants to be like, she's got that kind of almost successful loneliness.
Yeah.
It's
not bad. I like it. Yeah. Have the Hesses ever refuted this?
No, none of the things that I read said that there were, like, there was no yes or no's to them. There was no, you know, supporting it or you know.
Well, just the thought that they met at Brigham Young University. I mean, these are some churchy people.
Yes. Yeah.
It's possible. You take a look at something like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And
yeah, Homer's Odyssey.
Which is Homer's Odyssey. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie. Great film. Oh, no. Coen Brothers. We're still trying to come up with our August. There we go. Coen Brothers August. Little Raising Arizona. I don't know. Anyway. So Napoleon Dynamite, not talking about movies I'd rather be watching. Yeah, no, I didn't hate it. No, and I mean, I really appreciated its charm, especially with like the opening credits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's all the different foods. Apparently every single food that they put down, some character eats at some point in the movie.
Oh yeah, like tots and such. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
So, I mean, I saw someone that on some website that was like, well, actually no one eats the nuggets and no one eats this. And it's like, well, okay, but damn near everything else, because there's like a rare steak. There's a corn dog. There's the tots. Yeah.
Deb was eating the nuggets.
Okay.
Yeah, in the scene that he sits down with her for the first time and he's like, hey, you left your stuff in my house, it's in my locker, she's eating nuggets.
Yeah, like, I wish I had known this fact before I watched the movie, because I might have actually been watching for it, because it's like, is this like sponsors? Like, some of these some of these look like fake sponsors. Should I be writing them down? But I mean, it's someone's name. It's not actually a sponsor. But yeah. But the I guess the studio didn't like the first cut of the movie. They stepped in and they're like, yeah, you need to get a hand model and reshoot some of those. Because someone, I guess, had like, I don't know, hideous hands. Yeah, it's like, oh, man, that guy's fucked up. You got to get him out of there.
Oh, what is that?
Yeah, it's like the fact that like in Titanic, the drawing of Kate Winslet, that's James Cameron that's drawing. That's his hand in the photo or in the scene.
Interesting.
So, yeah, if you ever watch that, it's like those aren't Leo's hands.
Yeah, he's got some old ass hands.
Jim Cameron right there. That man can't do anything wrong. He can fucking draw naked ladies like nobody's business. I mean, yeah.
Man.
I've tugged it to that picture before. I mean, come on, that's a...
Oh, God.
That movie came out when I was still young, you know?
Yeah.
Internet was not as available as it is now.
I went and saw that in theater when I was a teen. And
I saw it like 5 times.
Very much enjoyed the giant Kate Winslet boobs on the screen.
That's right. Yeah. No, the girlfriend I had at that time was obsessed. And yeah, I've seen that movie more in theaters than any other movie I've ever seen in my life.
Those are hours that you will never get back.
I know, right? Yeah. Yeah, with someone who, oh boy. Anyway, a Napoleon Dynamite. So,
shall we go over the cast?
Sure. I mean, you know, we're not usually that formal on this show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no,
sorry.
Whatever. No, that's a habit you bring over from your show. Yeah, I mean, we can talk more about the cast. Very few of them I know, except the ones I mentioned. And, of course, Hayley Duff. Oh, and shout out, I gotta say, Sandy Martin as Grandma. Are you an Always Sunny watcher?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, and you don't like cringe.
Hmm?
Yeah, but you don't like cringe.
There's actually a very rarely on that show will I actually cringe, which is maybe that says more about me than the show.
Oh. Yeah, I'm loving seeing the pictures coming out of Wrexham with the with like the whole cast of Always Sunny there.
Yeah,
now that Wrexham was promoted. Yeah.
Was it Yeah, because what's his name bought the team, didn't he? Or somebody who
bought
the team? Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you that's a documentary worth checking out. I don't give a shit about soccer, but that documentary, it makes you want to give a shit about soccer.
All right, I'm in. I'll watch it.
I still don't, but I'm a fan of Wrexham. I'm a fan of Wrexham, and I'm looking forward to the second season of Wrexham. Yeah.
I think there's actually another celebrity, and I don't remember who it was. It might be like
Well, Paul Rudd was over there.
Yeah, but there's another, like, there's a female actor who just recently purchased like a team. It might have been a soccer team or it might have been a baseball team. It's slowly buying a team by a celebrity from Hollywood is slowly becoming a trend.
Yeah, apparently Ryan Reynolds is now looking at a hockey team. He's looking at the Ottawa Senators now.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Hmm.
Well, so for Napoleon Dynamite,
Dynamite. That's right.
Napoleon
Dynamite. Back to Napoleon Dynamite.
We got John Heater, obviously Napoleon Dynamite. John Grease, a couple of Johns there.
Yeah.
Uncle Rico.
Both J O N's, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's a statistic anomaly, yeah. Right?
Alternate casting possibility for Uncle Rico as well was Jason Lee. They reached out to Jason Lee originally. We were talking Kevin Smith beforehand.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Jason Lee is Uncle Rico. A little Earl in there, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't see it. I don't see it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I don't see it.
No, well, I don't. Yeah. John Grease is great.
Aaron Rule is Kip.
Yeah.
Efren Ramirez as Pedro. He was in something else like shortly after, and I don't even remember. I got to look that up while I just get distracted later. But Diedrich Bader as Rex. Rex Guando.
For
like $300, you could join my 8-week program.
What
every time.
Was his, like, the woman that plays his wife, was she anyone I should know?
Probably not. I wanted to say she was a Carmen. She was just like a significant bodybuilder. Carmen Brandy. I remember.
Efren Ramirez was in Crank High Voltage.
That's where it was, yeah.
And apparently he was in Lightyear. The first time that I really couldn't get behind a Pixar movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
Lightyear was okay, but
But yeah, that's right. He was in
Crank.
Cranked. Yeah, I totally forgot about that. He was like, yeah, he was kind of an interesting character in that one.
Yeah, Jason Statham is one of those guys that I'll see one of his movies and then just immediately forget the movie.
Oh yeah, that's every one of them, including the Fast and the Furious movies he's been in.
Yeah.
let's see, we also got as I said earlier, Tina Majorino as Deb. Again, she played the young girl from Waterworld, which is a guilty pleasure of mine. Sandy Martin as mentioned earlier as the grandma.
Always Sunny. Oh man, and just walking around smoking just like she was.
Eat a dang quesadilla. Hayley Duff, obviously, I want to say younger sister? Younger?
Maybe, probably.
Summer Wheatley, okay. Trevor Snarr as Don. Chandrella Avery was LaFonda, and that LaFonda. that was one of the best plot twists, though, out of the entire movie. Was,
okay, now I gotta say, because like seeing how her name is spelled, right? Like it's like F Fawn, and then it's D-U-H, like duh. Like is this a joke, or LaFonda? I don't know. Did they make a racism? Like that's what I'm wondering. Like
I would say it's definitely maybe one would classify it as a microaggression.
Microaggression, okay.
But I don't know. Like I think that it never really played off as I mean, okay. If we want to get in the weeds, we can get in the weeds with this one.
Hey, I like getting in the weeds sometimes okay. on this show. So yeah.
Okay.
No.
So as a black person watching this movie and I see this woman who is introduced as and the joke itself is that she is black because mm-hmm. the entire time you assume that he's talking to some nerdy chick. All right, she gets off the bus.
I assume she's talking to a dude.
Or dude. Yeah. But he the jokey plot twist is that she's like this 6 foot tall, like black woman named mm-hmm. LaFonda is that could be considered a like making black people the joke of this film. Like that's the butt of the joke.
But now the fact that she's not catfishing him, though, like she is actually genuinely into him. And
yes.
like when you see the bonus scene where like her family still doesn't get it.
Yeah.
But she fucking loves him.
Yeah. That's great and all. But at the same time, then you have him like slowly throughout the film being kind of brought.
He starts speaking in Ebonics. And,
yeah. Ebonics, yeah. Wearing the chains, the do-rag, like that stuff is kind of like that's a little bit far. You know what uh-huh. I mean? So that's if I were to get in the weeds, like that would be problematic for me.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Well, no, it's you know, and that is one of the things that you know, with having Colin as a co-host as well, he also brings a person of color's perspective to the show, and mm-hmm. I might as well try to learn. Mm-hmm. That's the whole you know moral of. The 2020s is we have to learn and we have to start to understand each other. So I'm absolutely open to bringing any of those kind of conversations
to wrap the show. To wrap that whole package up into saying like it could be potentially racist is because at the end of the day, the joke that's being laid there is the fact that she is like really the only black person that's introduced in this film as a shock value joke.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that would be cut dry. Now you could say like, oh, but there's you know there's another person of color. Pedro's obviously you know, but then again, Pedro himself is a joke because he is not very I guess he's not fully able to communicate in English. You know, he's not fluent in English. He's kind of still got like, and then the fact that everybody else is kind of talking to him like he doesn't speak or understand English. It's just I don't know. It's just like there's and then to pretty much make his entire family like very Hispanic or Mexican, as you want to say, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a little bit in there, but I don't think that
when all the characters have this cluelessness to them.
Yes,
though, I mean,
exactly.
It's
so there's
like they fit into the universe.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's like you gotta pick and choose kind of like where you want to feel this movie out at. And I don't necessarily like again as when I take a step back, I don't see it as being that. If I wanted to overanalyze it, those are things that I could definitely pick and choose at.
Yeah. And it's so easy to, and that's kind of where part of the problems with everyone trying to learn to be better people in the 2020s comes in, is the people that choose to pick way too much at
everything.
Yes. At everything, yeah.
Yeah, you know what happens when you continuously pick a wound? It festers, it gets infected, and it gets worse, and then you kill the entire thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, because I could also look at Kip's transformation as something as simple as he's just easily molded. Mm-hmm. He'll just do what he's eternally a submissive.
Absolutely.
So no matter what, like he's going to be, you know, manipulated in every way. If she says, hey, I would find you a little sexier like this, he'll do it. It doesn't matter.
But and that's the thing is like he might just there are people out there that are absolutely successful that live their life exactly like that. And more power to him. You know, he's found love and he's found his soulmate, you know, his chat room soulmate. So let him, you know, if he wants to let her make adjustments, you know, go for it. Maybe, yeah. We don't know.
Change
where she's
how he dresses, but not how he talks, though. True. Maybe it's how when we change how he talks, that's when it's taking it the step.
Maybe it was always in him. Maybe that's how he chatted, like, internally
that's
in
true.
The chat room.
Yeah. You only hear him muttering, but you don't see what he's typing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I sound a lot cooler in an email than I do when I'm trying to have a conversation. If I have an angry worded email that I've had time to think about, it's so much better than if I just freak out on someone in the moment.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
Always take a moment and breathe and come back to it and then write the response.
Yeah. So, okay, so let's talk about the movie Napoleon Dynamite, because we've talked about the credits with the food. ultimately, as I watch Napoleon Dynamite, there's not much going on.
This is a movie about nothing.
It really is, because there's a lot of him just standing there and, you know, hey... I will say again that I appreciate this movie a bit more than I will. It's never going to be a purchase for me, and I may never watch it again. You know, and I put a may on that, because this time I'm not going to vow to never watch it again. I don't hate it with the same fiery passion that I used to.
There's no vow of disdain here.
But there were some sequences that I laughed at because of the style of the filmmaking of it, where, like, Napoleon... when he first meets Pedro, and it's like, what kind of bike do you have? And then suddenly they're outside at the bike.
Yes.
It's like, I have a sledgehammer.
And again, like, a very Wes Anderson, like, kind of transition.
Feeling to it, yeah. And yeah. Even the framing and things like that at times. And then it's like, ever take it off any sweet jumps? And then, boom, cut to, like, the shot of them going off the jumps on the sledgehammer and Napoleon wiping out. And it's like, okay, I actually... I did one of those internal snort chuckles when he wiped out. Was that right? That was a funny part.
Yeah, when he racked his nuts on the sledgehammer.
Yeah,
I'll never forget that.
But you know, talking about the sledgehammer so much, I think I need to do a little sponsorship corner. So always on the look, it's a real bike, always on the lookout for product placements in movies, even the ones I hate. Napoleon Dynamite is brought to you by Magnavox, RCA and Sony Electronics, Sledgehammer Bikes, Dodge Vehicles, Gosner Foods, which is real, Big J's Burgers, which is also a real place in Preston, Idaho, Ball, the Jars, Canon Cameras, and Skittles. Taste that motherfucking rainbow. Plus the possibly fictional Idago and PRT bus lines. I couldn't quite tell if they were legit or not when I looked them up, so they're either fictional or not fictional. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So the llama is actually named Dolly,
yes,
in real life, and it's owned by Jared Hess's mother. So,
Tina, eat the food.
Does he just not know what to feed the llama? Or
that was my question. Like, who feeds a llama casserole?
Yeah, casserole, and then he comes out later with something else. I don't even remember what it was. But yeah, like it's don't they just eat like hay?
Yeah, so it's for me, it's like hard to like go through this. I had a hard time kind of writing the synopsis because I didn't, in my brain, this movie does not follow like a normal sequence of events.
No, not really.
It just kind of like runs all together because, again, there's nothing really happening.
Yeah.
There's Napoleon, there's the introduction of Pedro, there's Deb, and then there's, I want to say, like the dance.
Yeah.
And then there's the election. And it's like, that's the major, like, milestone.
But
of this
but
movie.
we have a bunch of farming for some reason.
Yeah.
We have, you know, like milk tasting, where he can tell what's wrong with the animal from the milk. You know,
yeah.
we've got like the chickens that like, What the hell is going on with the chickens talons that he has to put back in? Yeah, do they have talons? Like, it's just, there's a lot of nothing, but it's such weird, random, nonsensical nothing that it's like, okay, why aren't we explaining why we're doing this? Why are they cracking eggs and drinking it at lunch? Or was that orange juice with an egg cracked into it?
That was the most disgusting thing I have ever seen. And it was like again, it was just made to be like uncomfortably like awkward. And like, you just, I don't know, I feel... You're sitting there for an hour and a half witnessing this series of events that you just don't really fully grasp until the scene is already done and gone with.
Yeah.
And that's the Napoleon Dynamite film.
There we go. That's my friend Carolyn saying, hey, whoops. Yeah, we have to think about it the next day. And then it's funny.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the whole movie. Oh, that was funny 5 minutes ago. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Uncle Rico, who comes to the house to stay with Kip and Napoleon because Grandma's put herself in the hospital by jumping sand dunes on a date.
Yeah.
And then Uncle Rico, for some reason at this point in his life, decides it's important for him to go back in time. So he enlists Kip's help to sell
Tupperware
to make enough money
mm-hmm.
to buy a time machine. To go to the past and relive his glory days.
Which ends up being something that just zaps the nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah.
That's the movie. There you go. That's Napoleon Dynamite. And the show is over.
Well, and then, but that's the B story.
That is the B story.
Because the A story is Napoleon, like, and his friends trying to navigate this election, I guess.
Whoa. You're going very philosophical here, my man.
How dare you? I thought that was as plainly as I could put it. Like,
how dare you? No, you're absolutely right. Like, that's literally like, you know, it's navigating awkwardly. You have all the movies with the popular kids, all the cool kids, you know, your 21 Jump Streets, and then you have the opposite end of the social spectrum. And you have Napoleon Dynamite, which is like the not cool kids, the nerdy kids,
yeah.
the socially awkward ones. And that's Napoleon Dynamite's plot.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand a lot of the characters. Like, I don't understand why Deb runs away. I start to understand.
Your mom goes to college.
I start to understand the character of Napoleon. He just makes up stories. He lives in a fantasy world. He draws pictures of ligers. I know ligers are real, and it's a very specific breeding. It has to be a male lion and a female tiger. Because if you do it the other way around, then it's...
A tie-in?
Something like that, or yeah. There's a different name for it if you go the other way around, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I don't understand... Like, so he... Strangely enough, I kind of understand. He tells stories about Alaska fishing and all that sort of thing. You know, he just wants to take sweet jumps and he's an idiot. But like her, I don't understand. She comes selling shit and then gets spooked and takes off.
I can only imagine that it was, you know, my thought process behind it was she was trying to put herself out there. And, you know, maybe this was the first house that she came across that was she met somebody from school. And so it kind of just like, you know, I can't do this and runs away, you know, but like, who knows? Again, there's that business ethic.
Well, she still tried to aggressively sell him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but she takes off and doesn't even take her stuff with her. Like that's the thing I don't understand. Sure. Hand him the caboodle, right? But take the cart. Why are you leaving all your caboodles behind?
It's not worth it.
Yeah.
It's too many caboodles.
Too many. I don't know. Can you ever have too many caboodles?
That was a kit and a caboodle.
Yeah. And he's got like a trapper keeper. Like, that's the thing. I don't know what era they're in half the time.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Very true. I mean, like, this could be...
VHS? Like...
I would say like, yeah, like 80s?
Yeah.
Late 80s?
But it's supposed to be 2000 as far as I know.
Yeah. Again, purgatory, my man.
Yeah.
Purgatory.
Yeah. One thing I will say is again, with the sense that I didn't hate it as much. I appreciate some of the character work that's going on. I still don't understand the characters, but I appreciate, like, they're committing. Like, yeah. All of them are committing hard.
One thing I found was interesting was, it stood out to me, was the picture that Napoleon Dynamite drew to ask that girl to the dance.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie, that thing was very accurate.
It wasn't too bad.
It wasn't terrible. Yeah. The thing I learned about the movie, though, was John Heder. He drew all of the drawings in the movie, except for the unicorn.
Except for the unicorn, yeah. Yeah, and he was also making the bracelets or whatever they're called.
Really?
Yeah, he helped make those, like, between like shot setups and stuff.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because that's funny. Needed so many to hand out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess there's some sort of record that this movie holds for the most actors in a movie because of the fact that they listed all the kids as roles at the school.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. Because there's that one section in the credits where they just list like all 200 extras that they had for the movie.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I never even knew that.
I mean, not that they got paid a lot, because John Heder got like $1,000.
Yeah, that's wild for this movie that made what, like $4 million, $40 million?
But you know, that's got to be like the ultimate in gambling, that you are looking at this and going, okay, I'll take $1,000, just keep me fed.
Yeah.
And knowing that, like, I have a career now because of this. He was banking on those next three movies. Like, that's the thing.
That he got paid, like, in a check, and that he's got that $1,000, like, check in, like, a little frame on a wall somewhere.
Yeah.
Because without that, he wouldn't have everything that came after that. He wouldn't have the Napoleon Dynamite cartoon. He wouldn't have Blades of Glory. He wouldn't have Benchwarmers. Any of that crap.
Oh, I forgot about Blades of Glory. Holy shit, yeah. Oh, my God. See, and that one's a pretty good one.
That one was pretty good.
I liked Blades of Glory,
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, because apparently there's, like, also this story out there of Jim Carrey at, like, his dad's funeral putting a check for $10 million, a post-dated check for $10 million for, like, 10 years from then. And then by that time, he actually was making $10 million a movie. There's some legend like that out there about that. And so it's just, that would be great if he held on to that check where it's like, no. That was basically me paying for my schooling, and I got the great career out of it because of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the first house, or the first movie, there's his house money. The second movie, there's there's his car money. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, nowadays he does, like, a podcast with Michael Rosenbaum.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I hope he's saved some of that money. So Aaron Rule had braces put on his teeth for this role as Kip. And I guess speaking of the credits, he thanked both of the orthodontists in the credits.
Yeah. I guess if you want to go that far. The funny thing is, though, I didn't notice them until, like, the end of the movie. Does he have them the whole time?
Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't notice them, like, until, like, LaFonda shows up. So that's a good, like, halfway into the movie that I'm like, oh, shit, does he have braces? And at that point, it was like, I thought LaFonda had done it. I think it was when he was wearing the do-rag and the chains that was the first time that I thought, shit, he's got braces on.
I'm trying to remember if I actually see him back in the house. I mean, I thought, Yeah, because there's not really, that's the thing with this movie that I did notice. There's not a lot of close-ups of anybody else besides Napoleon Dynamite. It's like they actively wanted you to be awkwardly, like, attached to him and only close to him, you know?
Well, I mean, is that why they show him doing things like the helping hands thing? Like, is him knowing sign language supposed to be something that proves that he is a, you know, charitable, good person?
I think that, again, if we were to go back to the potentially
what could be non-politically correct,
the fan theory thing. Well, I was going to fan theory thing.
Sorry. Okay, yeah.
No, I was going to say that, like, if you look at it also in the classroom when he's doing the helping hands like motions, that boyfriend dude is laughing. He's like snickering the entire time. But then during the actual dance during the like election presentation, where his girlfriend Summer Wheatley is up on stage, they're not cheerleading. They're mm-hmm. doing helping hands also. They're doing sign language. And he's like, yeah, he's yeah. all into it, you mm-hmm. know? So it just shows that like kind of like that dichotomy of somebody doing something cool or somebody doing something who's cool versus somebody doing the same thing who's not cool.
It shows how easy the character choices for that actor was.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, I'm the jock. I don't like him.
Yeah.
And I got a crush on her.
Yeah, I don't think the bully, like the bully spoke, but I don't think Summer Wheatley's boyfriend ever said anything, like ever had like a speaking role.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing that bothered me during this watch through is like, I don't think he ever said anything.
Yeah, it's funny because my kids are at an age where they watch a lot of those Nickelodeon type shows that are live action, you know, the Cat and I don't even remember what it's called, the Henry Dangers of the world or the iCarlys of the world or the those kinds of shows. And those shows are very famous for getting someone that comes in for a sight gag. You know, they're dressed in some goofy superhero costume or something, and it's just so that they can make some joke about Lizard Man or something like that. And it's always this poor schlub of an actor that has to come in. He's all excited because he got booked on some Disney show or some Nickelodeon show, and he has to come in, look stupid for a second, not say anything, try to communicate as much as he can without saying anything, because otherwise they have to pay him, and then like schlub off. And it's like, oh, I feel bad for some of these people. And that's how, you know, even though they list everyone in the credits, that's how almost every other kid in this movie felt to me.
Yeah, true. Yeah. I don't know. Whenever you like that, for some reason that triggered this thought in my brain. Like, I don't know if you remember. Did you ever watch Mr. Rogers?
Land of Make Believe. Yeah. King Friday. Daniel Tiger. I'm all there for it.
So there was. I want to say it was the mailman that
Mr.
came
McFeely.
In, and he dressed up like a king one time, and he was like doing. I want to say he was doing a rendition of Hamlet or something Shakespearean.
Okay, yeah.
And it was very well done. And all I could think to myself was when I saw this episode, like I don't know where I saw it. It was just on TV one episode. I remember looking at it. I'm like, this guy is like obviously like a probably like Juilliard trained actor, some classically trained
actor.
And he's doing a rendition of Shakespeare on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And I'm just like, I don't know how I would feel about that.
Well, there's this TV show that we only get here, and probably, I don't know, you might have got it down there, but it was called Today's Special. And it was just some kid's show. It took place in a department store. There was a mannequin that came to life at night with the night watchman and other people, and they had their adventures in the department store. Yeah, okay. So anyway, it was this kid's show growing up. And it starred a guy named Jeff Hislop. And then when the Phantom of the Opera toured Canada and I got to see it for the first time, it was Jeff Hislop who was playing the Phantom of the Opera. And I'm like, this is fucked up because that's Jeff from Today's Special. That's the mannequin guy that comes to life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Same thing. It's like he's so trained to do something so much more like just appreciated and beautiful it's just like, okay, you're gonna be the guy on the Price is Right who's spinning the wheel.
are you saying that Drew Carey had Shakespearean aspirations?
I'm gonna say probably. That guy hates life. I know Jim Carrey is a very angry and kind of an asshole, so
you know, I gotta say, also speaking of assholes, here we go. See, you like that segue? That's not bad, that right?
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you. Absolutely. Summer.
Oh, segue
what an
ruined.
Asshole. Summer.
Like Summer was an asshole. Yeah.
I feel so bad for the fact that Pedro put himself out there where he's like, I'll give her a cake and everything. Like you could have been nicer. You didn't need to put the stank on it of three exclamation points.
Yeah. Like, well, And that was the thing, is like she approached Napoleon like, oh, is your friend here today? Like she was like super nice about it.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought like, and even to write a note, instead of just putting no, she had to write like to Pedro. Yeah, she went all out to be a petty bitch.
Yeah. Like she took the time to make the dots on her exclamation points hearts. Mm-hmm. Like just like this extra dagger of no, I took time to put the stank on this no. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I got a boyfriend that could have been, you know, I'm seeing someone that, you know, you don't have to be
Summer
a bitch.
Wheatley, you're an asshole. You temptuous bitch.
You're such an asshole. Would Hayley Duff have been a star that seems bigger than this movie at the time? Like, if they're paying the actual lead of this movie $1,000... Like, what is Hayley Duff getting out of that $400K?
I think she was still very much an unknown during this.
You don't think the Duff gets you somewhere?
No.
She's got Duff legacy. She, you know, little nepotism in Hollywood for the Duff name.
It might have gotten her in the door to actually get the part, but it definitely didn't do anything for her paycheck.
Okay.
Guarantee it.
Yeah. So for them, it was Napoleon Dynamite. Like John Heder was banking on Napoleon Dynamite kickstarting his career. Napoleon Dynamite was banking on Hayley Duff bringing in some numbers.
Yes. Yeah.
They're like,
is Duff involved?
Well, get all these Duff heads in there.
Yeah. It's like these days with Skarsgårds.
That's right. Oh, my God. Yeah. You drop into Skarsgård. You're going to get a nomination of something.
Yeah. You throw a stick into a movie theater, you're going to hit a movie poster that has a Skarsgård involved.
somewhere. Like, they're rabbits. There's so many of them.
They're like Wayans brothers.
Right? Yeah. Wayans brothers, Baldwins, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Arquettes. Fuck. Except there's more and more of all of those dropping off these days, though. I don't know.
At least they're not facing jail time.
That's right. Yikes. Too soon? Oh.
Might have been. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. Gotta feel bad for him. I like Alec Baldwin. I feel bad for him. I felt like the sentence was a little wrong.
Hmm.
I don't know. I don't want to get political, but I think... I think the wrong person is being...
Well, they dropped all charges against him, so...
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah. They dropped all charges. That's what I was saying. He's not going to jail anymore.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Yeah. Because the last thing I remember hearing was that, like, the person that handed him the gun was responsible, and he was. And I'm like, only the person that handed him. Like, for the judge to have said that... You should know because you've handled enough weapons. No, fuck you. I shouldn't know. No.
Yeah, no. No, no two weapons are alike, ever.
Yeah. So. Anyway, Napoleon Dynamite.
And we're back.
And we're back. There's not a whole lot of Napoleon Dynamite to this Napoleon Dynamite episode. And no. I love it. You know, I'm still having a good time over here. So... Napoleon gets a date with Trisha to the dance. I don't understand the Trisha part of it all. Like, I know we've just got a whole bunch of random events strung together in this movie. I mean, they want to learn karate all of a sudden, so we go to karate. I don't know why. But yeah, so we have this bit where he goes and asks Trisha to the dance, and her mom is like, you're going to go with that girl. Is Uncle Rico banging all his Tupperware customers?
Okay, that's something that we need to talk about, because I think that's what's kind of like in like it's
insinuated.
It's insinuated because there's that one scene where again Uncle Rico is in the house or Napoleon's in the van waiting for Uncle Rico to come back out, and he's like Uncle Rico goes there to like seal the deal.
Yes.
So I think it's insinuated that
don't bother me at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but yeah. I mean, that's a really old woman at that house. Yeah, that's he really wants that 20.
He really wants to sell that 32 set of Tupperware.
Mm-hmm. I see. I will say I audibly laughed at the moment where he ran over the Tupperware. Yeah. where he wanted to prove how strong the Tupperware was. Yeah, that part made me laugh when Kip did that. That was a good moment.
Well, it's because you could almost hear him say, like, not again.
Yeah, and then he just drives off because he's like, fuck it, I lost the sale now.
Yeah, they don't want to buy shit.
So what about Pedro's family with the with all their souped up cars? I like that they were at least cool guys.
Yeah, everybody was super nice, and that was the thing that was kind of like, you know, pleasing about it, especially the fact like when Napoleon is trying to actually get to the dance, he gets picked up by Pedro's brothers.
Yeah, I love that. I love that moment.
Yeah, it was great to see, like, just the fact, because you know, especially during like the election or the campaign, they look like they're like these hard, like, you know, like gangsters,
mm-hmm.
and they end up just being like super awesome and nice and supportive of Pedro. And I love that whole mini side quest that they go on in that.
Well, yeah, like I also love the moment where it's like, no, Pedro can offer you protection.
Yeah.
And then they pull up.
and he just looks at him and he shakes his head and no. Yeah, that's one of the most memorable things of this movie.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so is that though why we think Trisha's mom makes her go with Napoleon to the dance?
No, in my opinion, it was because Uncle Rico tells Trisha's mom that he's like wetting the bed and that he has like no friends. And you know, because parents used to do that. Remember, parents used to say things like, seed. Oh, this kid doesn't have any friends. You're going to go to his birthday party. Things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you end up at this weird party where you're one of three people that are there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of them being the kid, the other being his mom.
And somebody spiked the punch.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah. This is awesome. This is a lot of fun. Sure, we'll play pin the tail, head to head pin the tail again on the donkey. That's not awkward at all.
We'll wear the same blindfold.
Yeah.
At the same time.
So, okay, now the other, I mean, I could just keep going on about things I don't understand and have questions about, but why does Pedro shave his head and then wear a wig for the rest of the movie? I don't understand.
Like, I have no idea. I know he got sick.
And it's Chekhov's wig, because it's like, don't you expect that shit to come off somewhere near the end?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like during his speech or something?
There's no point to it.
Yeah.
There's literally no point to that. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. A lot about this movie doesn't make any sense. But again, there were moments I laughed at. I appreciated some of the things. But that's the thing, is because of the hype back in the day, something like this, it's an independent movie. It's clearly an independent movie, and it's not as hilarious. It's not as roll on the floor laughing as everyone thinks that it is, or in my opinion, at least. I mean, humor is subjective and all that, but I was watching independent movies by Kevin Smith, not independent movies by, you know, whoever the fuck nuts this guy is, right?
Jared Hess.
These couple of Mormons.
the Hessmans.
I like my Mormons made by Trey Parker and Matt Stone. That's how I like my Mormons.
Hey, kind of like I like my Canadians.
If you've ever seen the movie Orgasmo.
Oh God, yeah. You Orgasmo like and basketball.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You like some flappy headed Canadians, eh?
Yes.
Terrence and Philip. Oh boy. Yeah. We did South Park on here. So okay, so we get to the end. Now, is this an American thing, having a presidential debate followed by a skit?
I've never seen that done my entire educational career.
Yeah.
I've never seen somebody have to do like some kind of performance following a debate.
Yeah. I mean,
however, if that were actually a requirement in a presidential election for our country, I would think that we would get much better candidates in the White House.
Yeah, doing a little skit afterwards.
Yeah.
That could be fun. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I've watched a couple of presidential swearings in, and some of the entertainment is a little dry at times. So, you know, I don't know.
Oh, you don't like the girl reciting the poetry that she wrote about?
I'm not usually a fan of the poet laureate. Yes, I will admit that right out. I didn't mind Garth Brooks at the last one. That one was kind of fun. It's like, oh, okay, so even for the president, you won't put on real pants. Okay. You're Garth Brooks.
Hey, cool. Neither will Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. America. No, but, you know, as a Canadian, I've always had to kind of translate for American anyway, right? Like, because I am raised on all this culture that comes from you guys, because the majority of the entertainment we watch, I mean, how much Degrassi Junior High and Beachcombers did you watch growing up? Any Littlest Hobo in your past? We already talked about today's special. Ever seen Polka Dot Door? No? Okay. So... But I know what Romper Room is.
I feel very called out right now.
No, but here's the thing, right? Like, even our high school system, we don't refer to freshmen, juniors, sophomores, seniors like that, because our high school is grade 10, 11, 12. Because we have junior high for 7, 8, 9. Okay. Right. And so we don't have those kind of labels. So I've always known, growing up watching American programming, that it's like, okay, I know how a high school thing works. I know. But every once in a while, it's like, okay, are like homecoming rallies really that rowdy? Like, how much of them are Hollywood-ified? Because
all of it.
I've been to house parties that don't look like house party. You know, like, I've never been to a frat party where people are fucking doing gravity bongs and, like, there's, like, I've never been to that. I've never been to a house party where people dance. So maybe I'm going to the wrong parties. Like, it's been documented on this show that I don't have a huge party history, but, I mean, like, when you see homecoming and you see all those sort of things, the... expectations of the big dance, my prom was lame in comparison. We rented out a convention center somewhere, and there we go. Banquet and dance.
My high school prom. No, it wasn't my prom. I went to the prom as a freshman with a junior, and. Right. That prom was held in Liberace's mansion in Las Vegas.
Wild. Holy shit. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that was like, I got to see, like, you know, Liberace's big old piano, and it was a really cool house. But yeah, that's my cool story. For my actual prom was held at like a golf course's like clubhouse or something. It was so lame.
Yeah. Okay.
They really blew the budget on that one.
Yeah, we had ours in a hall that they also hold things like the Festival of Trees at Christmas time, where they have all the, you know, sponsors that have decorated trees, and you get to wander around and, you know, things like that. That's the kind of stuff that happens at this. The occasional band plays there. You know, it's the 2,000 seat venue for a band. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. It was okay. It wasn't Liberace's mansion, though.
No.
I mean, you know, like, have you ever been to a dance which is a live band dance for a high school?
No, I don't even know if those exist.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, neither have I. Like, but every movie.
every company event, every team building event, there's like a live band, and it's usually, you know, Some celebrity is the vocalist.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Spare no expense. Yeah.
Dr. Hammond.
Now, I'll give another compliment to it, is the end of the movie. I enjoyed his dance. I thought John Heater did a fantastic job with this dance.
He nailed it completely.
Yeah.
I will say that that's the one thing. It's like, there's that, he finishes his, so he does, he goes out on stage and it's like, he nails the entire scene. He just, you know, he's standing there, he starts tapping his toes and he starts moving his legs and he gets really into it. And it just, it builds so like beautifully and gracefully in that scene. And then it gets to the point where the music's done and it just like cuts off and he's still kind of dancing. And yeah. Then he runs off, and then there's that moment of silence, and you're just like wondering, as a new viewer of this movie, you're wondering what's going to happen, like how are they going to receive this, and yeah. The entire crowd goes wild.
They go Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure at the auditorium at the end of that movie.
Post-presentation.
Yeah,
party on, dudes.
Party on, dudes. Yeah, absolutely. Yep, they go absolutely apeshit for him. And, I mean, it's good. It's good that they're not all like, what the fuck? It's good that they, like, actually love it.
They go, but, they I mean, go
so
Hollywood
Pedro
movie.
Wins,
yeah.
I guess? Yeah, they go Hollywood happy ending with this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
After all the weirdness that we've experienced.
Yeah, and you don't really know until you see, like, some visual cues. Like, you know, Pedro gets a cake that he won. Somebody was, I think another thing that I was reading was saying that, like, an interesting thing was how it's actually true that if, you know, that when they voted for Pedro, all of their dreams came true. And like, you know.
As part of the fan theory, okay.
Yeah, as part of the fan theory, which really doesn't make any sense because the only people that got what they wanted was Deb. You know, she got with Napoleon. Napoleon got somebody to play tetherball with, and Pedro became president.
Well, Kip got a girl.
Oh, and Kip got a girl. Uncle Rico got his girlfriend. So, yeah, everybody's happy.
Yeah, apparently Uncle Rico's girlfriend that shows up at the end is Kip's real-life wife.
Really?
Yeah.
Did not see that coming.
Oh, I totally forgot. Okay, I don't know why I blanked on this. Hands down, my number one favorite scene that actually got a real... out loud, legitimate laugh from me. Not me just saying I laughed at it and it was like actually just me saying I laughed at it. I may have smiled. No, this was an actual like belly laugh that had me going for a couple of ha-has. The moment when you see the cow across the street.
Oh, yeah.
With the farmer pointing the gun at it and the bus pulls in front and bang! Oh my god, that was actually a legitimately funny moment in the moment, not thinking back on it. That was
absolutely
a moment that I actually did find very funny. And apparently it's inspired by a real event.
Yeah. I remember hearing the gunshot and then I hear a thud because I think it's the cow hitting the ground.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fantastic. Yeah, that was the funniest part of the movie for me. Right there. So I'll take that away with me no matter what.
You can have that. You're welcome.
Well, there we go. That is Napoleon Dynamite. Now, Aaron, on IMDb, it scored 6.9 out of 10, has a Metascore of 64. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 72% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 74%. But, Aaron, those are just numbers. Like, oh, who was it that hit who? It was Kip. It was Kip that slapped Napoleon, right?
No, it was Napoleon that slaps Kip because he's like, just try and hit me. You know, I'm trained to be
Oh, that's right. And then he hits him and runs away. Yeah. Well, like Napoleon hitting Kip and running away. Hit us with some reviews.
So funny enough, like as I initially went through or am going through these reviews, there are a lot of 10 out of 10s and 9 out of 10s.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
A lot.
I know the love for this movie, which is,
there is
what made me so furious with this movie. Yeah.
So one thing is like, I think this is a good one. You either get it or you don't, which I think is a fair like way to kind of explain this movie.
Absolutely.
And this one is written by Amthor Mandes. And it says, this is the epitome of quotable movies, which is somewhat true. I think every once in a while I still quote this movie.
Yeah.
It's random absurdity on a level only matched by the genius of Monty Python. I don't agree with that. What it is about? Honestly, nothing. I agree with that. Are there any morals to be learned? Not really. Is it relatable? Most likely. Not in the slightest.
Yeah.
But damn, if this movie isn't one of the most hysterical comedic masterpieces. And that's where I'm going to stop reading this one, because this person clearly is delusional. And they continue writing a long paragraph. But, like, that's
where
that...
Colin's never cut an off. Colin's never cut one off. I love your style. Right. Yeah, this person's clearly delusional.
I'll read until you stop making sense.
No, go ahead. Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, no, yeah, you're right. Like, Monty Python? No.
There's no way.
No. Like, I don't want to pat myself too much on the back for the Wes Anderson comparison, but, I mean, it's not as well written as a Wes Anderson movie, but there's definitely a Wes Anderson feel to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm noticing that actually after I'm thinking about these, I'm noticing that even more. So I'm so glad that you brought that up. So here's a 7 out of 10. Review by Eras Wildcat, and it says, "Grandma called. She said you're ruining everyone's life."
Oh my god!
And she said, "I'm so glad Napoleon Dynamite is out in theaters now. We couldn't get tickets at Sundance, and I wanted to see it then. I've read comments saying that the younger the audience, the more appreciative. I am 40 something, and I took my 16 and 9-year-old daughters. They were people of all ages in the theater, and I heard many people laughing their heads off." Maybe part of its appeal was not that it's set in southern Idaho, which might as well be Utah. We live in Utah and are not part of the dominant religion here, but we've grown to love our neighbors. Part of the film's charm for me was understanding the quirkiness of some people who live here.
Apparently that Preston, Idaho actually does have like an annual event. Like Napoleon Week.
Interesting.
Or Napoleon Weekend. Or yeah.
That would be an experience. That would be an absolute experience.
Napoleon Con.
Napoleon Dynamite Con, yeah.
Dynamite Con.
This person says, "I've read reviews from many people like Robert Ebert, who says that we were laughing at Napoleon, Deb, and Pedro because we feel superior to them, and therefore that's why people enjoy this film. I disagree with that. I found Napoleon and his friends to be likable underneath their nerdiness, and I was rooting for them the whole time." So that's something I definitely agree with. Yeah. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, it took me a long time of scrolling, but I managed to find a 1 out of 10 star review.
Okay, nice.
This one says, "Did I miss the instruction manual to enjoying this film? It was not funny at all."
And I think
I feel like,
is that is that the entire thing?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I feel like this first line. Yeah, I feel like this first line is very relatable to you. And it says, "When the movie was over, I sat there in so much disbelief. I so wanted to return this movie and demand a refund. I sat there for over 10 minutes and tried to figure it all out. How can such a boring movie make over $40 million in the box office and also be praised by countless critics? Then again, 2004 was a crazy year. All the bad movies made money. Shrek 2 is the third highest grossing movie of all time." So this person did their research. And even Catwoman made over $40 million. Either way, I could not believe just how popular this movie is. I could not figure out why people said it was so good. Was there an instruction manual to enjoying this film somewhere that I did not read prior to watching this? I want the 95 minutes and 6 seconds of my life back. Seriously, I do. I deserve something for sitting through the entire thing."
Holy shit, time too. Like that guy, he did not get the instruction manual, but boy, did he bring receipts.
and I'm just gonna let you know, this same review is a total of 5 paragraphs.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna finish it off by reading the bottom line, which is the final paragraph.
The button. Okay. Yeah.
What we call in my line of business the bluff, the bottom line up front. But this is bottom line at the end, so the blat. "Boring, too long, not entertaining at all. I could go on about just how weak this film really is, but I'll just cut this review short." You could have started at the beginning with that. Because I get sick feeling in my stomach just talking about it. Napoleon Dynamite is sure to be a cult hit. It already has a cult following. T-shirts with "Vote for Pedro" on them are being sold nationwide. Unlike what other critics have thought, this movie is not racist. So maybe it was, you know, maybe we'll see as that.
Oh,
it's
see?
Just flat
Someone's,
out pathetic.
Someone talked. Yeah. Someone had a little sniffing around.
It was an original idea, something that Hollywood has not seen before. but it was poorly written, poorly acted, poorly edited, and poorly done in total. I don't get the big joke of this film. I just don't get it. Napoleon Dynamite, you are either going to love this movie or just hate it with a passion. My score, 0 out of 10. So I guess they couldn't give it 0 out of 10.
Yeah, they had to give it something. Yeah.
So their actual overall score was 0 out of 10. So.
They wanted that was the button right there. They wanted to make sure that don't misinterpret this one. Mm-hmm. It's not that good. Oh wow, yeah, that guy. There we go. Yeah, you're right. He's thinking along the lines of me. Right on. Is that all of them?
Yeah, that's all I'm going to cover.
That's enough.
The rest of them are like, they're like, the thing is, like, no matter what, they're all 9s, 8s, 10 out of 10s, and they're all, like, essays. Like, somebody... They're so long.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Yeah. Right on. Yeah, so... I mean, like I said, 6.9, 64, 72, 74. I mean, the percentages aren't really showing that high of a score. I mean, there obviously are on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb some people bringing those down.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, still higher than I would rate it. I mean, like I said at the top, I've grown to appreciate it a little bit more for what it is. But, I mean, shame on all those people back in the day that said this is the funniest movie ever. I mean, even my girlfriend on this viewing, she's like, oh, you get to watch Napoleon Dynamite? Oh, she's like, just smoke a big joint, you'll love it. And, I don't love it, but I...
But did it make it better?
I don't hate it. Well, it always makes it better, but... I don't hate it with as much of a fiery passion as I used to. I can still do without it, though.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree.
It's not going to be a purchase. Yeah. Yeah. Aaron, any final thoughts from you for what did you think of Napoleon Dynamite? I mean, you said absolutely agree, but you want to elaborate?
I want to just say that this movie has some it's... It's very rare that you have a movie that has, that is as memorable yet unimpactful, as Napoleon Dynamite, because it truly, upon second watching, it's just a pointless, like nothing happens films that was just like it slowly became like back of the brain, like space taking quote fodder. That's like that's all it became, you know.
God.
Idiot.
Ever take it off any sweet jumps? Yeah, I mean, I guess a few of those hit popular culture enough that I didn't necessarily get them from this movie, but I got them from people that watched this movie like it was some horrible COVID. So I guess, like, you know, I have absorbed enough of this movie over the years just from it being out there.
Yeah. Just from it being present. It's like the present. Yellow sun for Superman.
Because it exists. Yeah. No, it's the opposite. It's kryptonite. It's always like just sucking a little of my energy away every day. A little bit of my life force has been devoted to loathing this movie for so long. So now I can at least let the weight of that lift from my shoulders.
There you go. Way to look on the positive side of things.
I've let go of a little hate. But I don't like it. I just don't hate it anymore.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Napoleon Dynamite, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you like that show. And again, this is, you know, you don't have to read that word for word when you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Do whatever you want. He usually just mentions the website and people can find shit from there. Or maybe I just did it for you. But if you like that show, you know, tell your friends, shout out, let people know. The word of mouth spreads so much for a podcast trying to find an audience. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and give us some stars. 5 of them would be fun. Say, hey, I love this summer series with Aaron. Oh my God, this is so much fun. They didn't even talk about the fucking movie. Ah.
they hated it so much they didn't even mention it.
But it's titled Napoleon Dynamite, so maybe we'll get some earballs on the show.
There were some references.
Yeah, every once in a while. Yeah. Or, you know, if you want to be like a goddamn hero of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of the Patreon family. Become an executive producer. And you get a shout out just like executive producer Joshua Blum from the 13th Hour Podcast.
If you want to contact or donate to the show, you can email IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Follow us on all social media platforms. I used to like this one on Instagram. I used to like this one with the number one instead of words.
This is the clunky shit that he doesn't like saying. This is why he's usually like, just go to the go to the website. All our links are there. Sorry.
Oh, you're good.
Interrupting your flow. I mean,
do what he says. Go to the website. All right. Go to the freaking website and find all the links on there, because nobody wants to spell this shit out.
Yeah. Okay? And the other thing that he also likes to mention, email us if you have a show request. Aaron, thank you so much for being a guest co-host. I also want you to take an opportunity here, plug your own shit too. Make sure you get some of that in there. Tell people where to find you, because you've been such a fantastic co-host on loan from another show.
So I am co-host on the Oblivion Bar podcast with my BFF and heterosexual life partner, Chris Hacker. We run the Oblivion Bar podcast. You can find us on all podcasting platforms and all social medias at Oblivion Bar Pod. We're actually on a little bit of a break as Chris goes through some much-needed medical care at the moment, but we still have tons of Patreon episodes and tons of back episodes, over 100 episodes in our catalog. And, we're just a topical nerd culture podcast that lets us talk about everything from video games to comics and all that stuff. And also, if you're a fan of supporting veteran service members and their families, go check out my nonprofit, which is at Shred the Stress on pretty much any platform, at Shred the Stress, also shredthestress.org.
Right. And also, if you want to hear more from me and my job of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter in the Capital, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And, I mean, we've got a whole different vibe here going on, Aaron. I mean, like, we've definitely got a very much, I don't know, much different vibe. So, I feel like with this summer series that we've got going on, I think we need to just give a little preview of what's coming next week. Because next week, we are going to one of your most hated movies. See, I'm going to build anticipation in episodes here with you for this summer. So, yeah, we've got your most hated movie. What do we have on the slate next week?
I thought that was the... I actually don't have my list in front of me of the next episode. That,
you know what it is.
Is it really? We're doing it that is. One next? Is it year one?
Rip the Band-Aid.
Good
Rip
God.
The Band-Aid.
We're doing year one.
Year one. Jack With Black and John Sarah classic.
Michael Cera.
John Cera. too many Johns in this movie.
You
mixed
John
Heder, John
Cena
Greece.
And Michael Cera up.
Yeah. I may have. And those are two very different people.
Oh God. Now I'm like making an amalgamation of John Cena and Michael Cera in my head. And it's terrible. But yeah. Oh my God. I am
year
so
one.
Not looking forward to year one.
Right on. So thank you for listening to today's episode this week. Yeah. And join us next week when we take a look at year one. And I used to like this one. Yes. That was fun. Holy shit, was that fun.
I enjoyed it.